Veritas Academy was chosen by Niche as the number one Christian and private school in Northern Virginia and third in the state of Virginia. Have coffee with the headmaster every Tuesday morning. Schedule your visit now. VeritasAcademyDC.com. VeritasAcademyDC.com.
Now,
on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
O'Connor and Company.
It's 5:07. It's O'Connor and Company. It's Tuesday morning, the 16th day of August, and we're already having a busy morning here at WMAL Central. Look at you, Julie Gunlock, all busy and prepared for your show.
Good morning.
I don't mean to sound surprised or anything. Coming up late, why am I mean to you? I'm starting
so
out mean to you. It's Tuesday. Coming up at 6:35, Lieutenant Colonel James J. Carafano will join us out of Heritage to look back on Afghanistan, the disastrous pullout 1 year later. 7:05, our friend Bethany Mandel, shocked to find that she had to put her kids in masks for summer camp still. 7:15, Sully Sullivan wants to be the new executive over there in Montgomery County. He'll join us. 7:35, Beverly Harzog of U.S. News and World Report. Talk about inflation and how it's going to affect you going back to school. 8:05, Dave Bossy has something to say about that raid on Mar-a-Lago. And at 8:35, Mark Morano from Climate Depot on the Green New Deal. But don't call it the Green New Deal. It's the Inflation Reduction Act. Just FYI, in case you didn't get the memo. That's all coming up. Let's talk about today, though. It's a bit of a preview. I mean, the real story will be tomorrow morning when we learn the results of the Wyoming primary. But based on the poll, and, you know, I don't like predicting based on the polls because anything can happen.
I think you can here.
Yeah. 30 points down now, 35 points down.
Yeah.
Liz Cheney might be taking an exit stage left, as
it
were.
Has she signed her CNN contract?
Well, one wonders what she might do next. Mm. But before we know that for sure, and listen, she'll go out in a blaze of glory. She's already said she'll be back in September with the new season of the January 6th committee hearing.
Yes.
Which, by the way, in case you're wondering, there is another Monmouth poll out now that shows that the committee hearings have actually had zero impact on anyone in this country with regard to their opinion of January 6th. You believe what you believed before the hearings. You believe what you believe after the hearings.
Yes.
Nothing has changed.
Yes.
So what did it do? Well, it probably ruined Liz Cheney's career. That's for sure. Political career. Elected career. Although some people are speculating that she may run for president. Have you heard this?
Can you imagine?
Well, she'll be well-funded.
Yes. Yes, she will.
Absolutely will be. So an interesting conversation occurred yesterday on social media that I thought that we could have. Whenever I see an interesting conversation amongst thoughtful people, I like to think, Julie Gunlock, that we can replicate that with us instead of
sure.
thoughtful people. And the conversation yesterday was this. My friend Dave Marcus, we've had David Marcus on. He's a great guy
sure.
over there at the New York Post. He commented that Liz Cheney today, on primary day today, will be rejected by her constituents. And it shows you how far she has moved away from the conservative Republican sensibilities that the people who put her in office hold. And the pushback came from, I think it's fair to say, never Trump Republicans like Jay Caruso.
Yeah.
Over there, the Washington Examiner, used to be at Red State for a little while, who pushed back and said, oh, give me a break. Liz Cheney hasn't changed one bit. She has stood her ground. She has stayed true to her principles. It's the party that changed. The party became Trumpy. And that's what happened. Mm. And it got me thinking, is that right? Or isn't it? I mean, who changed here? Did Liz Cheney change? Did the party change? Did the voters change? Or I actually have another hypothesis. I don't think it's Liz Cheney changing, and I don't think it's the Republican voters in Wyoming changing. There's another way, and that is Liz Cheney pretended to be one thing to get the votes of those constituents, got into office, and now she's really showing her true colors. So what do you think? 888-630-9625, 888-630-WMAL. Is Liz Cheney sort of the last vestige of the tried and true Reagan-Bush era of the Republican Party? And we have moved in a direction further. Well, I don't want to give a direction because some people will say on trade it's more to the left. And some people will say on some things it's more to the right. Some people say on national security it's more to the left because it's a little more isolated. I don't care. Have we moved away from Liz Cheney? Or has Liz Cheney moved away from us? Or was Liz Cheney lying the whole time? 888-630-WML. Here's why I think she was lying all the time. Because I remember when she was trying to win her primary in Wyoming and she had to come out and disavow her own sister. Mm. She had celebrated her lesbian sister, went to her lesbian sister's wedding, celebrated the idea that her sister was getting married, and then when she was trying to get the votes in Wyoming for the primary, she had to come out against gay marriage.
Yeah.
And no one believed her. No one believed her at all, but she said it because she thought she had to say it to win her election. And then when she's in, you know, that's when she started drifting away from whatever principles she may have pretended to have to get her election. She's not a Wyoming Republican. She's not a Reagan Republican. She's a D.C. Republican, which is a very different animal.
That is exactly right.
And I think that's really what's at play here. And the people of Wyoming finally have, number one, a viable alternative to her, and number two, have enough anger and resentment against her that they got motivated to say enough. But up until now, it was like, oh, fine. Yeah, we know Liz is Liz, but, you know, she's our vote, and at least she'll vote with the party most of the time, and who cares? But it reached this point where they had to say, oh, to hell with it. We're going in another direction. I think the people of Wyoming have always been right where they are. They just now want a representative who truly, authentically reflects them.
I think voters are different, though. I think Republican voters are different. I think one of the best parts of Trump is what the left and what never Trumpers make fun of, and that is the "but he fights." You always hear them, you know, sneer at that idea. But I love that he fights, and he does fight back. And I think voters, the best part of, you know, they call it Trumpy. You know, they become too Trumpy. People are not standing for this. I this is true of DeSantis. He does not stand for this. He does, you know, we have the example of how he responded to The View.
Yes. Right? Exactly.
Let's go over how you called me a Nazi and a fascist and, you know, you name it, all the isms.
Right.
And he said, I'm not going to play in your sandbox. I think we've seen this from other Republican candidates sort of saying, no, I'm not going to talk to you because you're not going to write a story that's fair.
Right.
That to me is the best part. I mean, when I look back at when Romney was, you know,
the standard bearer.
He was called everything in the book.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they were vicious against him.
They were so cruel to him. They were so cruel to McCain. They were so cruel to Cheney.
Right.
Okay. And, you know, Republicans just kind of rolled over and took this. It drove me crazy. And so to me.
Yeah. And they finally figured out how to fight back when it was Trump who was criticizing
it.
It's like, yes, they were awful to Dick Cheney. They were awful to Dick Cheney. But when Donald Trump was awful to Dick Cheney, how dare you,
sir? Oh, yes,
sir?
Yes.
That's it. It's impeachment time.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I think to some degree, Wyoming voters are tired of the treatment, like most Republicans in this country.
All right.
And so
So you think the voters have gotten a little bit more, we're not going to take it anymore.
Take this anymore.
They still believe what they believe.
She's so establishment.
Yeah.
You nailed it when you said she's a D.C. Republican.
Yeah. All right. So we'll take your calls. You're all lining up, and I'd love to hear from you, too. You hear what Julie and I think. I want to hear what you think. Did Liz change? Did the party change? Did the voters change? Or was she never really telling the truth in the first place? 888-630-9625, 888-630-WMAL. It's 515.
News Talk 105.9.
WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
Today looks like it's going to be the very last election day for Liz Cheney, at least in the near future. She could run for office again, but she will face a uphill fight in the primary challenge that she's got in Wyoming. And our question here is, has she changed? Has the party changed? Has the voters changed? Or was she not really ever telling the truth in the first place? I've got more to reinforce the idea that a lot of these establishment Republicans, D.C. Republicans, who really had their zip code in D.C. or the D.C. area more than they have in Texas or Wyoming or wherever they say they're from, that they were pretty much pretending to get your votes all along. I've got more evidence of that in a moment, but I do want to get to you. How about we'll start with Jack in Mount Pleasant. Good morning, Jack. You're first up here on O'Connor and Company.
Good morning. First of all, I think you mentioned voters. I think there are a lot of voters right now who are glad Merrick Garland isn't a Supreme Court justice.
Amen, brother.
But getting to Liz Cheney, she did probably grow up in Washington, and she grew up with a Republican Party that was Reagan and Bush and then had to suffer through Clinton. And, you know, a lot of Republicans don't seem to realize that things are different away from Washington.
Yeah.
And we're looking at that right now. And one thing I'll say for Trump, And I could say a lot for Trump, but one thing I'll say for Trump is that he actually did take time to speak to people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something people recognized. And I mean, everybody saw that.
And Jack, I think when you do that, you have a different perspective on things. You actually are hearing a different perspective than what you generally will hear with all the usual, you know, Brooks Brothers suited D.C. Republicans.
Mm-hmm. I tend to agree with that.
All right,
I hope he doesn't. I hope he hands it off to the next best contender and he is unincarcerated in 2024.
Wait, when you say unincarcerated, you mean unencumbered or maybe unencumbered? All right. Thank you, Jack. You mean a free man?
I hope he doesn't have to go to court again.
Oh, gotcha. Bye. All right. Listen, as soon as Donald Trump announces he's not going to run for office, all these legal issues go away.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about. But he makes a good point. I mean, that is a distinct difference, too, is that Trump actually listened to the voters and the people. But, you know, he mentioned the Reagan Republicans. You know, I've learned this from Mark Levin over the years, that there were Reagan Republicans and then there were Republicans who benefited from Reagan being president.
Yes.
And sadly, I think I will put the Cheney family in that category. Mm-hmm. I think they all talk about Reagan all the time. But then it's funny when it actually comes down to the fundamentals that Reagan stood for, when push comes to shove, too often than not, they disappear.
Yeah.
And here's my other example, because Jack just mentioned that Merrick Garland is not on the Supreme Court. You know, the fact that Merrick Garland's not on the Supreme Court and then Trump was able to put in three conservatives means that we overturned Roe v. Wade. Somebody pointed this out to me yesterday. It was stunning. I had to search for it, and it's true.
Yeah.
Since the Dobbs decision, since Roe v. Wade has been overturned, there has not been one public announcement from former President George W. Bush.
It is fascinating who did not celebrate.
Yeah. I didn't see an announcement from Mitt Romney. There may have been. He may have tweeted something.
Yeah, maybe.
But it was hardly, you know, where was Mitt Romney saying, thank God this happened. This is exactly what I would have done if I were president.
How are you not cheering in the streets?
Where's George W. Bush saying, hey, Alito wrote that and Alito was my guy. I told you I'd do it.
Yeah.
And nowhere to be found.
Yeah, I always.
And it makes you think, did they really believe this?
No, of course not. I mean, I always found the Bush abortion thing suspect. I mean, all of the Bush women are pro-abortion.
That's documented.
Yeah, they've admitted
this. Both wives were pro-choice.
And so you had this sort of tepid pro-life.
Yeah.
For the votes. I think, you know, around the dinner table, I don't think these folks were all that pro-life.
Yeah, if George W. does a victory lap right now, it might cause some problems at home.
Yeah, who was the first president to speak at a pro-life, you know, at the March for Life?
That would be Donald Trump.
Yes.
Yeah. Bob in College Park, coming in here, Bob, what do you say?
According to Reynaldus Magnus, the 11th commandment, thou shalt not criticize another Republican. Mm. So don't tell me, Ms. Cheney, that you're a Reagan Republican when you're going out there every day talking about how Trump is the worst thing to ever happen to the United States of America. And every time she says that, I donate to her opponent.
Bob, I'll be a Cheney's advocate here. Liz would respond and say, you want to cite the Reagan's 11th commandment? Trump started speaking ill of us first. He came in here attacking Marco Rubio, attacking Jeb Bush, attacking the war in Iraq. I mean, they'll say he started it.
No. You know what? Then that's like saying, I hit you, you hit me back. It's like, no. I mean, take the high road, Liz. Why not take the high road? Hmm?
All right, Bob.
You know, because somebody else speeds, does that mean you can speed? Okay, well, you know, then we're all speeding.
Thank you, Bob. If only we could speed on the Beltway these days. Thank you, Bob, in College Park. All right, more of your calls on this. Liz Cheney did not take the high road, it's true, but she might be taking a road out of town if the primary goes the way it looks like it's going to go. Actually, who am I kidding? She's going to stay here in D.C.
Are you kidding?
She just won't be pretending to represent Wyoming. It's 5:21. Today's the primary day. And I'll be honest with you. I've been on the air here. My anniversary is coming up. 10-year anniversary is coming up. And I can assure you that I have never done an entire 30-minute segment on the Republican primary in Wyoming.
Yeah.
You know, it's a local show. We talk about local things. But it is the highest profile primary probably in the country this season. This
will be the
Liz Cheney primary.
Yeah, and you don't get more sort of political royalty than the Cheney family, at least on the Republican side. And so it's a race that is interesting to watch.
And it's certainly an indicator as to where the party is right now and where the conservative movement is right now, because as stridently anti-Trump Liz Cheney had been her entire time during the Trump presidency, I don't think anyone ever imagined that she would face this devastating of a loss, it looks like it's going to be. So it's more than just being disagreeing with Donald Trump or even speaking out against Donald Trump. She has marshaled the forces of the federal government and the House of Representatives to
destroy
relentlessly destroy the man.
Yes.
On what many people think amounts to nothing. How about Jonathan in the district? Coming in here, Jonathan. Who changed here, the voters or Liz?
Well, I don't think Liz has changed. She just showed, as Phil Collins put it, two colors. She is guilty of the I can't admit I'm wrong disease.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she bit off on Donald Trump, never Trump, and she's dying on her hill, never Trump.
I think you nailed it, Jonathan. That's it. She became singularly obsessed with this one thing and has convinced herself that she's saving the Republic and the Constitution.
Let's also not forget that Trump wasn't exactly generous to her father or her family or the Bushes. He broke the rules. He did not kneel at the altar of the Cheneys and the Bushes. And for establishment folks, I mean, she is a proud woman. You can see it in every media.
And therefore, he must be destroyed.
That's right.
And that's 529. Personal. It is 537. It's O'Connor and Company. And we're just getting started here on a very busy Tuesday morning in the nation's capital. Larry O'Connor here with Julie Gunlock, getting you where you need to go.
Good morning. In
an infotained kind of way.
In a what?
Infotained. They're going to get information, but be entertained.
I've never heard that. That's very smart.
It's infotainment. Mm. It's 6:35, Lieutenant Colonel J. Carafano, 1 year after the Afghan pullout, and we'll reflect. 705 Bethany Mandel on mask policy still crippling families in this area. 715 Sully Sullivan wants to be the new county executive in Montgomery County. 735 Beverly Harzog of U.S. News and World Report talk about how inflation is going to affect your back-to-school spending. 805 Dave Bossie, Citizens United on the Mar-a-Lago raid. And then at 835, Mark Morano of Climate at Depot. Let's get right to it.
Don't you bear some responsibility for the outcome if the Taliban ends up back in control and women end up losing the rights?
No, I don't. Look, do I bear responsibility? Zero responsibility.
There you go. Zero. And he's still taking zero responsibility. Now, that was in February before we had any idea how disastrous the pullout would be. And now we are marking the one-year anniversary of the death-defying scenes at the Kabul airport. At the Kabul airport, where people were clinging on to Air Force transport planes at the exterior of the fuselage as they were taking off and dropping. I vividly remember being on the air that morning as the story developed and having to describe to you as you were driving into work exactly what I was seeing on television, and it was heart-wrenching and despicable. And frankly, of any image you saw of the Americans pull out of Vietnam, you know, everyone said, oh, this is going to be a lot like Vietnam. No, it was worse than Vietnam. Yeah. It was much worse.
And do you see any parallels between this withdrawal and what happened in Vietnam with some people feeling?
None whatsoever. Zero. What you had is you had entire brigades breaking through the gates of our embassy. Six, if I'm not mistaken. The Taliban is not the North Vietnamese army. They're not remotely comparable in terms of capability. There's going to be no circumstance where you see people being lifted off the roof of an embassy of the United States from Afghanistan.
That was President Biden in July when things were starting to crumble a little bit, saying there's no comparison to Vietnam and you're not going to see people airlifted off the roof. Of course, 1 month later, that's exactly what we saw.
Yeah.
It was a nightmare, especially for those of us who had supported these efforts for so long, recognizing and knowing that it was time to get out. But you certainly don't leave the way we left, the way this commander-in-chief directed us to leave.
No, and you certainly have a media that was happy to move on quickly. 13 lost soldiers, dead soldiers, and the media spent, a week focusing on it? It was quickly passed over for other issues. There's been really no investigation or after action report on the death of those soldiers.
Not much.
And it's horrible how, again, the coverage was very, you know, very brief.
Yeah, the media's ignored it because it's their guy. Yep. And the Democrats, the Democrats are in charge of the House and the Senate, and therefore there were no hearings. We talk about Liz Cheney just now in the January 6th hearings. What's more important out of this Congress is the hearings that didn't happen, the hearings on the Afghanistan withdrawal and the hearings on the Wuhan lab and the coronavirus. Neither of those hearings, not to mention the oversight hearings on the Justice Department calling parents terrorists, yeah, domestic terrorists for going to school board meetings. Yeah. These are the hearings that haven't happened.
Right.
But the first one out of all of those, I could quibble between Afghanistan and COVID, but they're both pretty devastating. Part of the reason why no one has paid attention to it is because, honestly, I think they don't care. And you can hear it in the voice of Joe Biden in many of these cuts that we've pulled from the last couple of years. Excuse me, over the last year. Listen.
In April, I made a decision to end this war. As part of that decision, we set the date of August 31st for American troops to withdraw.
By the way, these were his remarks. So you heard that. I made the decision to end this war. Again, this man's entire presidency has been about one thing, and that is trying to remove and erase the Trump presidency.
That's right.
Just reverse anything that he did. So he recognized going in that he couldn't reverse course that President Trump had put us on to end the conflict in Afghanistan, which, by the way, again, bipartisan support for that. It ended up, you know, the idea of getting out of Afghanistan was agreed upon. It was how you did it. But he had to make it his own. The arrogance and the megalomania of this man. I decided to end this war. Everybody knows what a paper doll fool this man is. We all knew that we were going to be pulling out our troops before he became president. It was already announced.
Yeah.
But he had an "us is me, and I'm going to do it my way." Well, how did his way look?
And we knew it for a long time, and yet we did it in such a disaster. His administration.
Yeah.
His Department of Defense did it in an absolutely disastrous way that left 13 soldiers dead, not to mention the civilians that were there desperate.
That's right.
Desperate to get into that airport.
That's right. And by the way, U.S. citizens who were still trapped there that were still trying to get out.
The images are so horrible. Yeah.
Billions of dollars of equipment, by the way, I don't want to forget. That was left behind and now in the hands of our enemies.
Just very quickly, I remember the story of the dogs that were left behind. Yeah. Military dogs. Also, personal pets of some of the embassy staff just let go, right? Yep. That tells you how bad this was. Because, of course, people would have made arrangements. Military dogs are worshipped. You know, they are treated incredibly
revered.
Respectfully. And to leave them on the ground there, that was a disaster.
All right, a little bit more of a look back here on Afghanistan and some updates on where we stand right now in Afghanistan 1 year later in a moment. It's 5:43.
In April, I made a decision to end this war. As part of that decision, we set the date of August 31st for American troops to withdraw. The assumption was that more than 300,000 Afghan national security forces that we had trained over the past two decades and equipped would be a strong adversary in their civil wars with the Taliban. That assumption that the Afghan government would be able to hold on for a period of time beyond military drawdown turned out not to be accurate.
In other words, we were wrong. In other words, we made an assumption. We assumed that the military would be able to hold and the government would stand, and that assumption was not accurate. That's the same thing as saying we were wrong. We were wrong in our planning. But as soon as you start, I remember reporting this all through late June into July. Town after town after town was falling to the Taliban. You change your plan according to what's actually happening on the ground. That's why that Q&A there where he said, no, there's nothing like this compared to Vietnam. You're not going to see people airlifted. That was the second week of July as things were falling apart.
That's right.
They had another month to go before it completely collapsed, and they could have changed their plans. Now, listen again. Biden continued here in this statement, blaming the military and the government in Afghanistan.
But I still instructed our national security team to prepare for every eventuality.
Clearly not.
Even that one. And that's what we did. So we were ready when the Afghan security forces, after two decades of fighting for their country and losing thousands of their own, did not hold on as long as anyone expected. We were ready when they and the people of Afghanistan watched their own government collapse and the president flee
amid the corruption and malfeasance, handing over the country to their enemy, the Taliban.
All right. So, first of all, why do I feel like I'm going to hear this exact same speech years from now from a president about Ukraine?
Right.
All right. But set that aside for a minute. This man was a senator during the Afghan War. He was a vice president during the Afghan War. He took 4 years off. Yep. Then he became president. And now he's acting like, I had no idea that government was corrupt. Right. I had no idea that military wasn't strong. He put himself up as a genius on foreign policy.
That's right.
And now he's blaming everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is how it's done in Washington.
This is how it's done.
And then when he had a State of the Union address earlier this year, he made not one mention of Afghanistan during the entire thing.
Oh, and the media is fine with that.
Yeah.
Can I just make one comment?
Mm-hmm.
He sounded a little better then. This was a year
ago. Just a year ago. Yeah.
It's fascinating to hear how, because
how he's
deteriorated. I haven't heard his voice from a year ago until right now. And wow, he really has.
They concluded, the military, that Bagram was not much value added, that it was much wiser to focus on Kabul. And so I followed that recommendation.
All right, now there's Biden. When he's not blaming the Afghan military and the Afghan government, he's blaming his own military Pentagon, saying, they told me to abandon Bagram. That was the military air base that we built there out of nothing. It was beautiful. It was, frankly, a more elaborate and more technologically capable airport than the Kabul airport was.
Yeah.
They told me to abandon it, instead focus on Kabul, which makes no sense at all. And actually, the generals, after the fact, have said, actually, no.
Yeah.
That was not our recommendation.
Yeah, and
how he
suggests it's not a big deal.
Right.
To have left equipment and a fully functional high-tech airport
that was behind multiple layers of American security instead of going into downtown Kabul surrounded by the population that we saw that poured onto the runway.
Yeah.
And hung on for dear life on the side of an airplane, that was better. And then, by the way, when we decided to send military back in midair and make a U-turn, fly back there and help facilitate people leaving, that's when 13 of our service members died because we relied on the Taliban to handle security outside the Kabul airport instead of at the Bagram airbase.
But it's not his fault.
None of it's his fault. Are you kidding
me? It's not his fault.
Yeah.
A pandemonium outside the airport.
Well, there is, but look, but no one's being killed right now. God forgive me if I'm wrong about that, but no one's being killed right now. We got 1,000 somewhere, 1,200 out yesterday, a couple thousand a day, and it's increasing. We're going to get those people out.
Yeah, but they didn't get people out, did
they? Right, right. And, you know, nobody's being killed right now. I mean, what's the condition of women in Afghanistan, right? Where are the feminists? Where are the female members of Congress? Where are the female reporters talking about the restrictions that are now back on women in that country, right? Thank
you. You remember Heather Nauert was a spokesperson for the State Department, wasn't she, during the Trump administration? She shared this yesterday. 1 year later, I'm not alone in receiving emails from vetted Afghans who served alongside us since 9/11. She shared an email she got. The subject line is, please save my life. Dear Ms. Heather Nauert, I really need your assistance. I am eligible for relocation. I already received my blank, filled blank, and have all required documents, including passports. And the letter goes on to say, I've been left for dead. These people are still in hiding. These are the people who were our allies, and we've abandoned them. Adam Credo over at Washington Free Beacon also reports on the fact that the fact is that many of the highest profile terrorists, the elite Afghan commandos, they fled to Iran with weapons and American training. We had trained them, and as soon as Taliban came over, they decided, okay, where are we going to go? America's not going to take us back. We're not down with the Taliban because we've been trained to kill them. So where do they go? They crossed the border Iran, and now they found allies with Iran. House Foreign Affairs Republicans on the House Foreign Affairs Committee have put out a full investigation with details of that happening and details of the fact that those remarks that I just played from you from Biden last year He was misleading you. According to the Republicans on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, he knew full well that the events on the ground were much different than what he told the American people, but he continued to lie because he was dead set on just getting out and finishing this. And if 13 service members died, and if we leave Americans and our Afghan allies behind for dead, well, you know, to make an omelet, you got to break a few eggs.
Well, Claire, you're being way too negative. At least the Justice Department is investigating parents who want to go to school board meetings.
That's
I mean, look, we're safe. We're totally safe.
It's 5:53. Coming up, we're going to talk to Jim J. Carafano, national security expert. We'll pick his brain on this one-year anniversary of the Afghan pullout. But next, we'll give you the latest on the Mar-a-Lago raid. Keep it here.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.